Welcome to Fed Central, brought to you by Deloitte, a program where executives and federal government leaders talk about the issues and initiatives that are making a real impact on the business of government today to help government help America. We welcome General Chuck Wald, director and leader of Deloitte's Department of Defense practice, to the show today, and also Casey Healy. He is a director in Deloitte Consulting and Federal Energy Management and Sustainability practice. We thank you both for joining us today. We're going to be talking about energy and sustainability, so it's a natural that you would both be here with us today. Also, want to just give a little background on both of you so people know who they're listening to. General Wald is responsible for providing senior leadership and strategy and relationships with the Department of Defense practice. He is a subject matter specialist in weapons procurement and deployment, counterterrorism, national energy, and international security policy. He is a specialist on energy security, and General Wald retired from the U.S. Air Force as a four-star general after serving over 35 years in the U.S. military as a command pilot with more than 3,600 flying hours and 430 combat hours. Also, Casey Healy, he is, of course, in our energy management and sustainability practice at Deloitte. He has 25 years of experience in the energy sector, including 15 years consulting at Deloitte and 10 years in industry. During this time, Casey has served clients in the areas of alternative energy, business and IT strategy development, business process reengineering, talent and resource management, and stakeholder engagement and portfolio planning and management. Thanks you both for joining us today.
Good to be here.
So thank you.
Today, gentlemen, we're talking about energy strategy for the Department of Defense. So, General Wald, give us an overview of where the energy strategy stands today.
Sure. I think the big thing is the Department of Defense uses a lot of energy. On the other hand, it's only a fraction of what the United States uses on a daily basis. So there's a really understanding of what that really means to the Department of Defense. So maybe some perspective. The Department of Defense uses about 1.7% of all the energy in the United States on a daily basis, which seems like a small number. On the other hand, in 2008, when we had the spike in oil prices that went up to around somewhere just shy of $150 a barrel, the Department of Defense spent an additional $11 billion that year on energy costs, which was unprogrammed. So just from a cost standpoint, it's hugely important. Number two is, obviously, we can't do much in the military without energy or fuel, if you will. And so it's a security issue as well. And probably thirdly is, much of our energy comes from places in the world that aren't necessarily in agreement with us. Matter of fact, 90% of all the fuel in the world is owned by nationally owned companies, and many of those countries where it comes from don't really agree with our foreign policy. So there's a national security imperative there for the department as well. So it's a very complex issue. It's not easy to resolve, but I think there are some solutions we can talk about later.
So, Casey, we do have an energy policy now that the Department of Defense has announced, and they plan to operationalize. Talk to us a little about that plan.
Right. So the OSD has published energy strategies. Each of the services have their own energy strategies, and they all sort of agree upon the same theme is that energy is a critical asset. It needs to be actively managed. It needs to be protected, and it needs to be conserved. And I think that we're starting to see these policies and strategies starting to converge, even though they're publishing separate strategies. They're all very much on the same themes and on the same sheet of music.
So, General Wald, how do we then implement a plan that really gets to the heart of, alternative energies being used, in forward operating bases or bases here in the United States, perhaps even in aircraft?
Well, Casey kind of alluded to this, but it's a confluence of different situations or issues that are coming together at one particular time. One is our national debt has made us focus more on how much money we do spend. The Department of Defense budget is going to be under pressure to decrease how much we spend. There's also the imperative of human life in Afghanistan and Iraq. Many of our casualties are incurred in convoys. Many of those convoys are carrying liquid, either water or fuel, to the battlefield. And that fuel becomes not only expensive from the standpoint of dollars, but in human life. And then three is there's a executive order out today that says the agencies and the government need to start looking at their carbon footprint. So you add those three imperatives together and it starts, demanding a policy. On the good side, the department has appointed a director of operational energy plans and policy. That's Sharon Burke. And she will be, in a broad sense, developing the strategy for the department. The services also have very active energy programs and are led by senior officials in those services. So I think the attention is there now. It's just a matter of putting that policy into effect.
Right. And you mentioned the OSD policy for operational energy, and it's based on three major themes. One is more fight with less fuel. So the focus there is to reduce the overall demand, since that's one good way of improving energy security is just simply to use less of it. The other pillar that's built upon is the idea of options. More options create fewer risks. If I'm not tied to one source, if I'm not tied to one location where I have to find it, then I have better versatility in terms of, you know, how I want to employ my energy. If somebody shuts off my supply here, I can go there. That's a great sort of way of improving your security. And then they're also focusing on building capability to lower the overall costs. So nobody wants to simply dictate that we'll use less fuel. A better approach is to build it into the acquisition process. So we design and acquire equipment that has the same capabilities but is built to use less fuel. So I think that's a very far-reaching, long-term vision that they're putting into place.
Yeah, I'd just add to that. I think it's important to note that from a diversity standpoint, as Casey pointed out, we can internally diversify from the United States standpoint. We now have a large discovery of shale gas, if you will, or at least the technology to get to the shale gas. There's certain issues you have to work to get there, but as well as our own crude oil that we have in Outer Continental Shelf and in other places in the United States, and there's an issue of safe drilling. And then you add alternatives, you know, renewable energies of wind or solar are things that can displace some of the petroleum we're using. Now, the problem a little bit with sustainables like wind or solar or things like that is that today in the United States that only makes up around 1% to 2% of all the energy we use. So there's a long ways to go there. But I think the appealing thing to me about having more of a domestic ability to develop our own energy capability is that it gives us a little bit more security from the standpoint of disruptions, and it lets us control our destiny a little bit more from a security standpoint.
Are there legislative and policy roadblocks to making this happen? Where does that stand? Does Congress have a role in all this?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely. I mean, it's a... I don't think I can emphasize enough that this is all about leadership and will. You know, we have the technology, we have the natural resources. If we do it right now, it's a matter of implementing policy and leadership. So, again, I'm kind of a half full glass kind of guy. So I think because of the situation we're in today, from a national debt standpoint, from a geopolitical standpoint, globally. And then the other imperative is about the understanding of how much energy we do use in both combat and peacetime, that this confluence of activity is going to come together now, and I think we'll have the right leadership to start addressing it. But again, it's going to take a national leadership to make this happen.
Right. And an example of national leadership that's already been put into place is the Energy Independence Security Act of 2007. Which stipulates energy savings, conservation, implementation of or the uptake of biofuels. It directs that the federal government be more sustainable in terms of their energy use. I mean, there's a whole series of provisions there that direct both the federal government to be sort of sustainable with respect to energy, but also starts to establish goals, targets, and visions for the country as a whole. It starts to bring together some leadership direction. And I think the president's recent sort of endorsement of biofuels as a new form of transportation fuel for this, or source of transportation for the U.S., is another example of somebody getting out front and setting the pace.
So that's something that, you know, relates to cost, but there's also a security issue involved in all of this. Why don't you talk a little about that?
Well, I think if you look at one of the major sources of our energy, which is the Middle East, I mean, you could argue why we are present in the Middle East. I mean, there are different reasons people could argue, but one of them has to do with the fact that much of our energy or resources come from the Middle East. And so the assurance that we can have that energy as part of our national security strategy. If you look at the RAND study that came out in 2010 that looked at how much money the United States government spends on military presence in the Middle East, and this is minus the Iraq conflict that we're in now or Afghanistan, it was somewhere between $65 and $85 billion a year. That money is actually translated right directly to the taxpayer, and in some ways is directly translated into how much we spend at the pump. And really, you could look at that number and you could say in the United States we're paying about $9 a gallon for gasoline. Well, that's an imperative on its own. From a military perspective, again, the assurance that we can actually operate our military forces, that those forces will have an adequate and appropriate amount of fuel available wherever we go worldwide is, I think, imperative enough. And then lastly, I think, is the fact that the rest of the world, whether we like it or not, is moving toward a carbon kind of based economy. Europe in 2012 is going to start charging for the carbon on transportation. When we operate there, we're going to have to pay for that. So we're being driven down this road of alternative fuels and more efficiency and more economy.
You know, just to pick up on the point you made about the transaction cost of buying fuel from overseas sources, we tend to focus on that $300 billion a year number, but there have been studies that show that the impact of the U.S. economy is probably three times that. So if you look at the transfer cost of the money that's being sent overseas, and then the lost economic opportunity here in the U.S. of what that $300 billion might have done, then really, you know, you're starting to talk about our overseas dependency might cost us $1 trillion a year. That's a pretty significant number. And then when you think about it from the perspective of national security or national energy policy, that $1 trillion number creates some pretty, you know, advantageous business cases when you start to explore alternatives to that.
All right, we're going to come back with more on this topic and then explore some alternatives, what can be done by the Department of Defense and all of the various agencies to implement new energy policies that can really save some money. So we'll be back in a moment. We're listening to Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guests, General Chuck Wald, he's the leader of Deloitte's Department of Defense practice, and Casey Healy, he is a director at Deloitte Consulting and Federal Energy Management and Sustainability. And we'll be back in a moment with more. Stay tuned. I'm Jane Norris on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Security threats facing the world today are more complex and diverse than ever before. There is a shift underway in how the U.S. military plans, organizes, and equips for battle. Deloitte's new report, Defense, New Realities, Innovative Response, draws the expertise of senior retired General Charles Wald, Lieutenant General Harry Radaghi, and Lieutenant Pete Cuviello to examine how the U.S. should reduce its deficit by updating the military's current force structure. To download the report, visit Deloitte.com/US/DOD.
Welcome back to Fed Central, brought to you by Deloitte. Today we're talking about the energy strategy of the Department of Defense and whether alternative energy supplies can reduce costs and stabilize fuel access and security for DOD. We welcome General Chuck Wald. He's the director and leader of Deloitte's Department of Defense practice, and Casey Healy, director in Deloitte Consulting, and he is in the Federal Energy Management and Sustainability practice. So, gentlemen, we talked a little about the lay of the land for the Department of Defense and their energy strategy. So talk about some solutions. Talk about what they are implementing, what the Department of Defense is implementing, and what your view or vision for their sustainability and energy management might be.
Yeah, well, I think the DOD kind of puts it in three categories, at least the way I look at it. One is their fixed installations, their permanent bases, if you will. Two is their forward operating locations. That's Afghanistan, Iraq, other places around the world, Djibouti, let's say. And then the last is these big, what I kind of refer to as muscle movers, big ships that don't have nuclear power plants or tanks, let's say, for example, that wouldn't lend itself to a solar panel or jet engines, let's say, that are very sophisticated and probably aren't going to change much in the near future until we have a breakthrough technology, which could be quite a while. So from that perspective, the fixed installation solution is really, I think the technology's there, the wherewithal is there. It's just a matter of starting to translate that into how we either modify or build new capability in our bases. So that's somewhat of a will issue. It's a policy directive issue, but it's not necessarily technology limited. The forward operating bases where our troops are fighting on a daily basis and still putting their lives on the line is a little different. And that's something that needs to be resolved immediately. So there's some commercial off-the-shelf technologies that are being used and some other existing technologies. For example, in Afghanistan, the Marines have started using, in some places out there, solar panels that have decreased the amount of fuel they actually need to use for their generators by a significant amount. So that's kind of near-term ingenuity on the United States part. The last one is the one that interests me the most, and that's this replacement of or an alternative for diesel fuel for our fighters, tanks, or big ships, let's say. And that can be done. The technology's there. We know that the Navy's flown airplanes with algae fuel, and the Air Force has flown airplanes with different types of biofuels. The Navy has a plan. Their leadership is visionary. For 2020, they're going to be 50% alternative fuel in their fleets by that time. It's called 50-50 by 2020, the Green Fleet. The issue is, how do we actually get industry to start scaling up some of that capability? And because of the historical ups and downs of alternative fuels in the United States, where private equity has invested in some of these alternatives, and then because of cheap oil, let's say, that investment hasn't become lucrative, there's been a tendency to be very, very careful on investing. And I think Casey and I have worked on a project for the DOD with private industry to help send a signal to investors that the biomass demand is there. We could talk more about that in detail, but to send a signal to equity, and I've been told there's somewhere between $1.5 and $2 trillion worth of equity waiting on the sidelines to invest, that private equity would go ahead and invest in potentially alternative drop-in fuels for the DOD.
Casey, there's an MOU that was circulated fairly recently by the Energy Secretary. It involved the Department of the Navy and I think USDA. So is that part of what General Walt's talking about?
Yes, it is. And as the General's referring to, a number of different initiatives on the part of DOD to reach out and start to engage with the private sector to increase the availability of these fuels. And it started with a memorandum of understanding between DLA Energy and the ATA to start investigating the infrastructure issues, the supply issues, the financial issues related to getting these fuels into the supply base. Then we see the Navy engaging through their Defense Production Act Title III sort of avenue with a ready to invest hard money in the supply base to increase availability of these fuels. And now we see the Air Force issuing a request for information to gather more information about the supply base and what is out there in terms of the fuels so that they can better leverage that knowledge to think about future purchases. So they're starting to engage in a very constructive, proactive way. I think over the long term, the challenge will be to start to sort what is the best deal. When is the right time to pay for these fuels at a premium over the conventional fuels? And how long will that premium have to be paid? So as you get through the technology and the supply issues, then you get into the business issues that are very important to DOD over the long term.
So General Wald, how do they overcome that? I guess that's it's a cost chasm. Yeah. How do you get there?
Well, a lot of times crisis drives change, right? And I would prefer, as a military guy, not to wait for crisis to make a change, but hopefully that won't be it. That will make a change, though, if we get into a serious crisis where fuel goes up somewhere above $150, let's say $200 a barrel. That will make it imperative. It was interesting in 2008, I think, when the fuel spiked at $145 or $148 or so a barrel, it happened rather quickly. And I think most of us recall that that was a fairly significant event for most of us. The gasoline at the pump was somewhere around $4 plus a gallon. And there was a cry and hue in America about the cost of fuel. Interestingly enough, today we're almost at the same number, but it kind of was a slow boil of the frog. It didn't happen as quick. So the crisis part made a difference earlier. I suspect if you really sat down and thought about it, we probably would say the crisis is pending. So I think the debt crisis may be a motivator. I think leadership, I think some of the things that Casey alluded to are going to start moving us down the path. But ultimately, it will be visionary leadership that says we have to do this before we get into a fix, and I think we're there.
So this MOU that that they're talking about, that I just spoke of and you you discussed, it's something that Deloitte has been working on. I mean, something similar. So talk about that.
Well, similar ideas. The idea is simply that you have to engage in a proactive way with a supply base. You can't simply sit back and, you know, sort of the field of dreams approach to this and wait for things to happen. You have to get out there and engage. So we've explored some different approaches of bringing people together to pool their demand and share risk. That it's similar but not the same as what the Navy is doing with the Defense Production Act and this $510 million that they're getting ready to invest. So we're moving along similar paths, and I think that just sort of reinforces the concept that it does take partnerships. It does take proactive engagement because it's just not going to happen by itself.
Yeah, let me add to that a little bit too. That great point. I think you'd sit there, if you looked at all the facts, you'd have to say, why isn't this happening? You kind of said that a minute ago, Jane. And it's just kind of the nature of the business. The DOD is not a business. The DOD is a government agency. And they have restrictions and processes they have to go through. Obviously, business is a business. They're not going to put money into something that doesn't get a return on investment. And Casey and I believe there's a role for Deloitte in this case to play a kind of an arbiter, if you will, or a stimulator for the fact that you bring the government and industry together in a public-private partnership way to agree that they'll bring the best of both worlds together. So in the government case, long-term investment in commodities is not necessarily legal. So we'd have to have some legislative relief there. From a private standpoint, unless there's some assurance that the fuel will be available or private industry necessarily, like let's say a FedEx, for example, that uses a tremendous amount of fuel every day. They're one of the largest users of fuel in the world, is not necessarily going to put their own money into something that would be an investment in technology. In this case, that would benefit not necessarily themselves, but the rest of the United States. So how do they join forces together, these two major demand signals, and come up with a solution? And I think we've got an answer to that.
So the answer is, Casey?
Oh, boy. Well, how much time do we have? I think, we alluded to the idea of the alliances and the partnerships to bring people together to share risk and share the costs. That's certainly one way. Then there's just some very business-like approaches to this, because one thing that impresses me about the DOD is that there's a significant number of activities going on, and they're going on across all services. They're going on at DLA. They're going on at DARPA, at OSD. So out of this huge amount of activity, the right solutions and that are appropriate will emerge. So the question is, how do I accelerate that? How do I get more quickly to the things that work the best and share them across the whole DOD? So one of the things that you start to do is you start to define common strategic goals. So how would I define, as the Department of Defense, what energy security is? These goals are already being out there. They're being formed. They're being defined. But at some point, if you're going to start sort of rationalizing all this activity, you have to start rationalizing what the goals are and what the measurements are. So you begin with that definition process. Here's my goals. Here's how they're prioritized. This is how I define success. And then begin to drive it into the metrics of, well, how am I going to measure that success? And have that be common so that if I'm in the Marines or if I'm in the Army, if I'm a seaman or an airman, that essentially, barring the, accounting for the differences between services and missions, everybody's talking in the same vernacular, the same language, the same metrics. So that's part of it.
So how far down the path has the Department of Defense gotten? And in terms of length of time or, you know, the investment that they need to put into this, given the tight budget restrictions that, you know, all government is facing?
Let me start out with a kind of a negative, and then I'll get to the positive.
Okay.
So the negative is, in 1980, President Carter, in his State of the Union address, outlined the Carter Doctrine, and that's that we would not allow the energy in the Middle East to be disrupted by any force. We'd use military power to ensure that. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's 31 years ago, and we've gone through cycles. So we went through the disruptions from energy throughout the years, and then we spiked back where energy, in some cases oil, was $10 a barrel, and now it's 100 or so again. And so from a negative standpoint, we've had this warning for a long time. And on the good side, though, and Casey's outlined some of that, the services have picked this up as a major issue, mainly from a budgetary standpoint, but also from an assurance of energy standpoint. So, and again, the DOD, based on guidance from Congress, has appointed a director for this strategy. I think my feeling is we probably have insights into what we could do right now, and it's just going to be a matter of, again, the compelling leadership and probably going to have to be the Secretary of Defense to do this, or the President.
Casey?
Yeah, I think it's definitely important for the Department of Defense to sort of stay the course. I think I've had the pleasure of meeting many people who are influential in the energy space at DOD, and I'm impressed with the fact that they are thinking long term. They know that there's no immediate solutions. It will be a journey as opposed to just a sprint, and they think that way. Now, how do I overcome the short-term issues of, I've got a budget that has to be done every year, and we anticipate there will be budget challenges. So you have to watch the costs, be very mindful of where your benefits are. So you have to be very comprehensive and looking for the advantages that you gain through these different programs. And those advantages will be anywhere from cost to energy security. And by carefully defining the benefits, you can keep your portfolio going year in, year on out, especially if you tie them to those long-term goals.
Well, gentlemen, it's been a fascinating conversation. I know you have a lot more to say. I'm sure we'll revisit this topic again. I want to thank you both for joining us today, and we'll talk about energy security again in the future. You've been listening to Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guests, General Chuck Wald, director and leader of Deloitte's Department of Defense Practice, and Casey Healy, director in Deloitte Consulting in the Federal Energy Management and Sustainability Practice. Thank you all for joining us. I'm Jane Norris on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Security threats facing the world today are more complex and diverse than ever before. There is a shift underway in how the U.S. military plans, organizes, and equips for battle. Deloitte's new report, Defense, New Realities, Innovative Response, draws the expertise of senior retired General Charles Wald, Lieutenant General Harry Radaghi, and Lieutenant Pete Cuviello to examine how the U.S. should reduce its deficit by updating the military's current force structure. To download the report, visit Deloitte.com/US/DOD.